Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you'll need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I saw a video he made and I was shocked. He is in his 80s, still kicking butt, working out, staying active. He looks like he's got more energy, can work out longer, even has plenty of that energy left over for his grandkids, and he did this by making one change. He said that he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this thing too. She's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, has energy all day, and Chuck's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their health. Staying active is important. Moving around keeps you feeling good. Making sure that you take care of your gut health, your digestion, just overall, is also very important. Right now, you can go to mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Watch Chuck's video right now. That's mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Check out what Chuck Norris has to say. What's got him feeling so good these days? He explains everything, and you won't believe how simple it is.
All right, another edition of the Wrestling Perspective Podcast, episode 391. Meckenwolf, 420, I believe, is coming on. I'm really excited about him. NWA coming on to promote their big show October 28th. Super excited about that. But before that, let's get to some fan emails. Remember, if you look down at the little scrolly thing below, that's where you can get the email address. You can get Lars's name at the gram. Super hipster over here. Look at that. But our email address, wrestlingperspectivepodcast@gmail.com. Get your questions, hot takes, blah, blah, blah in. Let's get to as many as we can before we start going. Jim from Minnesota wants to know, I've seen Rancid 4 different times, and all the times I've seen him, I know Lars doing wrestling moves on stage is off-brand for the band, if that's the case for the four shows I've seen. But how hard is it for you not to get into a wrestling character when you're on stage?
I am a wrestling character when I'm on stage. It's funny because our drummer goes, Lars, you're not a punk rocker. You're a pro wrestler trapped in a punk rocker's body. But in all honesty, I feel like I do most of the talking and communicating to the crowd. So I think of the promos that I loved as a child and how they connected with me. And I try to bring the inflections of what pro wrestlers do. And I think it's a natural thing for me to do anyways, because I feel like I am a very personable person. But, I sometimes do a little Sabu. Sometimes, to fall back down, we have a Ric Flair, woo! So, and I always go, woo, I'll give little things away, so people who know.
Okay. Kit Kat in AEW, Jade Cargill seems like she was on a different level, even though she was still green in the ring. In WWE, from the little bit I've seen from her, I'm a little bit worried that although her physique and her looks will translate, her greenness in the ring won't, and it may bring down her value with the WWE high standards of matches. What do you guys think?
Can I go first?
Yeah.
The WWE have already presented her as a superstar, which was more than AEW could do in 2 years. And she hasn't stepped foot in a fucking ring yet. So let's just for the sake of argument, she's probably not going to be let in a ring. Now she's at a real training facility where she's probably busting her ass. I don't think she knew all that. I mean, she didn't even know how to to, you know, hit somebody with a chair. They just said, go hit that person with a chair. And she's like, I've never done that before. And then, you know, our good friend of the show, Mr. Phil CM Punk, showed her how to hit somebody with a chair. It's like, oh, you choke up on it and you go do it. So it's like, you're coming from, you know, a very indie-rific kind of promotion, which is, that's kind of what its draw is, right? Mm-hmm. Now you're kind of stepping up the ranks. I don't think they're going to let her in the ring until she has some sort of idea what she's doing. I mean, I just don't think that would be WWE. So as far as her being green, I mean, they said the same shit about Kurt Angle.
And this is their chance to build the female version of Brock Lesnar, right? I feel like they dropped the ball with Ronda, where Ronda had everything she could do too big that be that next big thing, but then they overused her on regular TV. They put her in tag team matches all the time on TV. And to me, it lessened her value, where if they would have just kept her a pay-per-view draw and a little bit limited on TV, she could have been the female, you know, Brock Lesnar-esque character, where you're kind of doing that with Jade now, where you're not putting her in a ring. You're giving everybody a little glimpse of her here and there. We all know who she is. And if they keep doing that for 4 months and build up, I think they're golden.
Yeah, I definitely don't think they're going to fail with her. I mean, like I said, they've already presented her like she's somebody. And, you know, it's insane how well they've already done it. It's the ultimate, you know, smash that shit in somebody's face. Like, this is how you actually do it. So take note, you know what I mean?
I agree. Paul M., with the WWE running out of valid Hall of Famers, do you think Michael Cole is a surefire Hall of Famer?
Michael Cole, well, maybe because he's been there. You know, I never was really a fan of his work. I always thought he was more, but he's been there. He's been a constant.
I will say this. I, for the longest time, I kind of said what you said, like, he's been there long enough, maybe tender wise, you know, sure. But our friend Petey Williams kind of corrected me on something and made me look at it at a different angle of, you know, maybe not for us, but for the people 10 years younger than us, Michael Cole is the voice of their generation. That's the only voice that they know. And for us, though, we've had, you know, the
JR
and we've had Jerry Lawler and we've had, you know, WCW guys. We were spoiled on voices. But for those guys younger than us, Michael Cole is the only voice of the WWE that they may have known. And we remember him getting pie-faced by The Rock as a, you know, sideline kind of reporter role. So I guess from that aspect of looking at it from a younger generation, maybe he is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's debatable. I would put a few other guys in there before him, but, you know, I don't know.
You look at everybody who's come and gone next to Michael Cole, though.
I agree. Like, look, it. No one has kept his job longer.
Yep. So maybe I don't know if he's good or bad, but
I'm not a big fan of their announce teams currently.
Right.
I just am not like, yeah. I mean, I feel like Corey Graves is the most in touch.
I go back and forth on Corey though.
Well, I feel like he's the most in touch as far as like culturally with
pop culture and stuff, his references.
Well, yeah, his references and even his references that might leave somebody in the dust. I think he's got a good handle on that. I do think, yeah, I mean, Michael Cole, maybe he deserves a place.
Maybe we're like the old guys now where, you know how when we were younger and we're like, you know, that Dan Marino and Joe Montana are awesome. And then our parents were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't forget about, well, you know, Dan Fouts.
Well, no, I understand. Well, fuck Dan Fouts and the Chargers. They can blow me. But what about, is Joey Styles in the fucking WWE Hall of Fame?
No. And once again, that's a guy that should
have. Right there, he should be in.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on. Albert from St. Louis. Where would you put Judgment Day if you had to create a list of the greatest factions ever?
Bottom.
I mean, they had potential, but, you know, WWE will never let those guys be the biggest faction above the bloodline, whether they deserve it or not.
Well, I think they will. They'll give them their opportunity. I just think that there's in every, see, the thing with factions, the great ones anyways, every single person in that faction's a star. I would say Rhea Ripley outshines all three of those guys put together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that, you know, she's like the Ric Flair of the Four Horsemen, but you couldn't take away anything from Arn, Ole, Tully, Lex, Barry. I mean,
Paul Romo.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, Dominic is great, but people, I mean, he's not even given an opportunity because as soon as he opens his mouth, they boom. And it's like, is that going to get old?
You know, I mean, they did that with Vicky Guerrero and that worked pretty well for her though.
Yeah. But she also was able to combat that with,
right.
You know, so.
Beth from Albuquerque wants to know, I was recently thinking about the Chris Benoit incident, not so much the incident itself, but WWE's reaction to it by pulling all the matches off pay-per-views in the network and then eventually adding them back in. How do you feel more about that kind of situation than what actually happened?
It's hard because I think they're very strongly linked together. You know, it's almost... that's a tough question. I haven't even, you know, it's so funny because I have not, I mean, when we talk about the top 10 best wrestlers, like Chris Benoit has come so far out of my memory because of what he did as a father. You know what I mean? Like, I still can't think of him as, it's hard. It's super hard. He was my favorite wrestler for years, And, you know, it's hard. It's hard. That's one of those things where I feel like what he did in real life transcended the wrestling business.
Right.
You know, so I've just recently been able to have a TV on and like, I have old comps or whatever. And then there's a Chris Benoit match, sit through it.
I ask this question all the time, right? Can, whether it's a heinous act or someone's political view, whether you agree with them or not, can you separate that stuff from the artist?
Yes, you can. But I feel like when you murder your child and your
wife, yeah, but
that's when it's like, that's a little hard. It's kind of like if somebody's a pedophile, it's like, it's hard to separate. For me as a father, it's just tough. I mean, I think it's subjective, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, you know, say pedophilia is okay. And it's like those people, and if I was ever in the same room with them, I would legitimately stab them.
Right.
I would literally go find a knife and stab them and just say, you're a fucking moron. And you should be off the face of the earth, right? So But then again, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. That's a hard question to honestly answer because I can't separate.
I don't know the last time I've actually watched a Benoit. Like, I'll go back and watch an old pay-per-view, and when the match comes on, maybe I'll watch it. I won't pay attention to it. I won't look at it as the same, like, oh man, those chops. I don't know if that's a cop-out answer, but that's just kind of how I watch. I almost watch it like I'll go play on my phone. Occasionally I'll look up or I'll be like, oh, you know, Jericho versus Benoit, WrestleMania or whatever. I may watch it for the other guy. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that. But like I said, it's just up until recently where I've been able to leave a match on.
I agree. And let's get one more question in and then I guess we'll call it a day and move on to our guest. Michael Lee says, Tony Khan has to be an embarrassment, not only the AEW, but the wrestling business in general. Mainly bitching about losing to NXT on Tuesday night since a C-show had some major names on that show. What tactics will Tony Khan use now to compete against Raw SmackDown for one night for each show? Maybe have MJF put his championship belt on. He gargled it up there. Not my fault, guys. on the line for an episode of Dynamite or Collision. The fact that AEW is losing to NXT and all NXT had to do was put some old guys on shows that AEW is not a legitimate competitor.
Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I think from what he was saying, I kind of agree. When your A show can barely compete against someone's C show, and all that C show had to do was throw the Undertaker and Cena on just to say, dude, you can't run with us. You can only run with us if we let you. I mean, I think, but
that's the thing. I got to put myself in his shoes, right? And I would. But I don't think that's the thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you didn't. Cause it's I'm kind of working through it in my head where, you know, you're also talking about a brand that's been around, 10 years longer?
Right.
You know, beautiful, by the way. Bam Bam making a second. No, this is a first appearance. You showed me that off the air last episode. But, yes. I mean, it's also apples and oranges, right? I mean, sure, it's an A show versus a C show, but your A show's only been around for 4 years. That C show's been around for 10 or 12 years. I don't know.
I don't think it's really a matter of A and C and, you know, this, like, you know, that kind of talk. I don't see NXT as a C show. I see NXT as like a different programming, a different source of entertainment. I forget at times that it's part of the WWE because I feel like it's got its own identity. I feel like it's one of those places, if you're like me, you know, I like watching rookies, right? I like watching to see who's coming up. You know, NXT is also the place where, you know, I saw Timothy Thatcher, not for the first time or whatever, but you know what I'm saying? Like, well, he'll be a guest at some point. That's why it came to mind. But my point is that's like, it's apples and oranges. I think, I don't think, you know, AEW has their own problems. They can't put people in seats. That's what I would be addressing. I'd be addressing, well, why can't we do this? Because we burn out these towns because we go to them way too often. We fire our biggest star, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing things. They're not, it's hard. You know, it's full just judgment. And my, I want to see AEW succeed. I just don't necessarily know if they're going to, I feel like they have the talent. The problem is that they don't have the talent doesn't obviously listen to the producers because right. If they did, or I would say the majority of them don't. I mean, you know, there's obviously, you know, Peg Hanger Page, you know, like he's obviously gone and said that he doesn't listen to anybody. It's funny because here's a school teacher by trade who doesn't listen to anybody. It's like, you must have been a terrible teacher then, you know what I mean? Like, but my point is that, like, I feel like it's the inmates run that asylum and they're all getting paid very nicely. And why would they, where is the motivation to compete?
Well, you know, here's the problem. Doesn't it always, and we go back to this and it's almost getting tiring, WCW. It's the same exact script we saw with WCW where the inmates ran.
Yeah, go ahead.
The inmates ran the asylum and then people were overpaid, or, you know, the Kevin Nash story where, you know, they thought they were going to WWF. So they start throwing more money at them and they were not going anywhere. And then all of a sudden they take it in and then this guy has a book. Then this buddy has a book. It's just, it's the same story over and over and over again. I don't know how this ends. Maybe it's different ending because someone has limitless pockets, but
I think that I don't know if it will end, but I will say it's going to have right now. They can't put more than a couple thousand people in an arena, 17,000, right? They just can't. Their ratings are, you know, if you even go by that, Collision is tanked. Rampage is not what it once was. Dynamite is their sort of like their Monday Night Raw, right? So that's just been sort of consistent. you know? Mm-hmm. I thought that maybe the Edge, bringing Edge in there would spike it, but it really didn't do anything. I felt bad for Edge because, you know, when he comes out, you know, to that arena and he goes to the right side of the arena and there's literally nobody there for him to do his thing to, you know?
Right.
So I feel like they got more problems than trying to compete. So, and I think that the AEW fan who's just, you know, AEW all the way, ride or die, I don't know. I just don't think that there's that many of them.
I agree. All right.
Yeah, so just hardline that way.
All right. So when we come back, we'll have MechaWolf 450 coming on. We're excited. NWA talent. Dude, this guy has done everything. He's a rock star, like bona fide. If you've seen the video of him doing his Triple Mania, oh man, a few months ago. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody play a song and then run into the ring and wrestle. I cannot wait to talk to him about that. Wrestling Perspective, don't forget, Wrestling Perspective Podcast at gmail.com. Send your email.
I was noticing our colors are like Chris Jericho's new Barney doll.
Oh, By the way, I had the color set up before Chris Jericho's doll. So just so you know, we're not ripping them off yet. Don't come after us with your copyright infringements, Jericho. Stay away. But yes, and don't forget, follow Lars on the gram right below his name. It'll be there all show long. Just in case you're watching and you're like, what's his gram name? It's right below. Just look, watch. Or if you're listening on any of the podcasts, then go to YouTube, Wrestling Perspective Podcast, subscribe. We'll love you forever. Trust us. I mean, I already do. So when we come back, MechaWolf 450. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Wrestling Perspective, episode 391, MechaWolf 450. I got to say, I instantly became a fan of yours, and I think a lot of people did at Triple Mania. It was me, Petey Williams, sitting at a bar watching it. We were super impressed. We're like, who's this guy playing on stage? At first, we thought it was a break, right? And then all of a sudden, you go out to the ring, we're like, what the fuck is this guy doing? He's like... This might be like the third time I've ever watched a Triple Mania in my life, and I'm blown away by it. And I guess Lars and me, at least my first question was, after that moment, how much did you see your fan base or your internet presence grow?
Thank you for having me, by the way. It was like a master plan that I had. It was Triple Mania week. We released a single on Wednesday. We played the show, I believe, the Friday before Triple Mania, because I have a band as well. So we played that single with my band the first time we played it live, the night before Triple Mania. And then Conan is crazy enough to let me get away with whatever crazy idea I have. And he let me do this. So I'm like, yes, they let me get away with this. So I saw significant growth in the following of not just my band, but also my MechaWolf social media as well, because a lot of people have not seen anybody do that. You know, I know Jericho did it a little bit later, you know, when they wrestled in London, but that was the first time that someone did that in Mexico, you know, because usually rappers do it, you know. And I wanted to just be like, you know what, if we're going to play this song, it has to be the week it comes out. And we're going to do it live, and I'll do it right before I go to the ring. And I was so blown out before I even got to wrestle, because I'm, you know, I'm like going crazy and stuff. And it was really cool. It was really cool. And yes, I did see a big growth on not huge, like huge numbers, but I did see a significant growth in numbers for the band and also my social media.
Well, one of the things I will say that of all the times that I've maybe seen something like this happen, yours has by far been the best, because there was no lip syncing. There was no tracks. There was just you, a microphone, and then not only that, then you go to the ring. It's like, and then you have a match. So it's like, you know, I can't say the same for anybody else. I can always tell when people are running tracks. I can always tell when people are lip syncing. So kudos to you, my man. My question, I guess, is to you. So you got the adrenaline, right? You just did this thing right here. Is it hard for you now to switch on, oh, shit, now I got to go do this?
You know, my thing is always as soon as I come out of the curtain, whether I'm going to play with the band or I'm going to wrestle, I'm always 100% turned on, like 100% turned on. I've had, you know, my mother pass away right before I wrestled Chris Hero for the first time in my career 10 years ago. And then I had to wrestle that whole weekend, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then fly to Puerto Rico, which is where I'm from, and then be able to see my mom at, you know, her funeral. So all of this stuff is happening in your life, and there's all this crazy stuff. But when you're out there, you have to be turned on 100% because there's somebody out there in the crowd that is going to be inspired by you. There's somebody in the crowd that's going to be, man, I want to be the next Mecha Wolf. I want to be the next Lars. You know, I want to be the next Dennis. You know, I want to be these guys. Like, there's people that want to be just like us. And when we're not on, when we're not turned on to 100%, they could tell. So I always make sure that no matter what I'm doing, so like 5 people, 20 people, 100 people, 13,000 people, like in Triple Mania, I'm always right there turned on 100%.
I feel bad for the kid who wants to be the next Dennis. I'll be honest. I'm Dennis, and I don't want to be the next Dennis.
Hey, man, you're doing your thing, and somebody out there wants to be just like you.
Bro. Aim higher, guys. aim higher. Yeah. So trust me. It's easy to become me. Get divorced twice. Give away half your stuff a few times. You're halfway there.
This is like a therapy podcast. Psychotherapy podcast.
I like
the wrestling, the therapy perspective. Yeah,
there you go. I'm going to be crying soon. This will be our Oprah moment. But I got to get back and talk about your style versus the NWA style. And on paper, it seems like a relationship that shouldn't work out together. If you really think about this, right? NWA, especially when they did their reboot and Billy took over, they were like, no off the top ropes, no flippy stuff. We're going to keep it old school wrestling. Now, obviously, over the years, they relaxed off of this. They brought in a lot of guys, and you're one of them, tag team champs and all this other great stuff. But when they're coming to you, do you look and go, well, not so much the size or NWA itself, but like the product and how you would fit in? Was there any apprehension?
Well, at first it was interesting because I've been friends with Billy for like over a decade. When he had Resistance Pro in Chicago, you know, I'm a Chicago boy because I moved from Puerto Rico to Chicago and I lived there for 7 years. So I always tell people that that's the city that built me and made me into a man. So I met him way back then. So when he had the NWA and I had the chance to come, I was like, hell yeah, of course I'm going to come. And if I get to do it with my partner, Bestia, even better, you know, because we wanted to bring something different. And at the time, there was no tag team division. And every time we would wrestle, the agents would go, just tone it down. Great match, but just tone it down a little bit. Next month, same thing. Another match, tone it down. It was awesome, but tone it down. So it took a while not to just necessarily dumb it down, but it took a while to adapt to the NWA style within the confines of the Lucha Libre style that we bring to the company. And also without taking away from who we are, you know what I mean? Like it's promos, and that's why we're there, you know, to be different. So why else will we be here, you know? So it was all, it took a little bit. But once we found that sweet spot, that in between NWA style, La Rebellion style, Mexico Lucha Libre style, we were like, okay, now we're good. And that's when they, basically when they stopped telling us tone it down, that's when we knew, okay, we're good. We're right in where we need to be in that sweet spot. But you know, it took a while. It took a while, especially because both my partner and myself, we come from, you know, a Lucha Libre background here in Mexico. We could do whatever the hell we want. You know, they just tell you, just go crazy, you know, and everybody's just trying to one-up each other every match, you know, and the NWA, we're telling stories, we're doing something, we're all, I always say we're all, you know, in a Viking ship, kind of like rowing towards the same destination, and I think that's cool.
Well, you know, one of the things that maybe, I mean, when I first kind of clocked who you were doing some stuff down in Puerto Rico. And you were doing, you know, in some pretty legendary promotions down there. Mm-hmm. Now, would you say the Puerto Rican style for you, was that an easy transition from how you learned into getting into those rings?
It was, because to me it was really almost like second nature, because in Puerto Rico, they train you to learn television right off the bat. You know, when I was there, I was with Savio Vega. He was my first boss. So Savio was like making us and having us cut promos so many times. So we got it just right. And back then I couldn't cut a promo to save my life, you know, and he was honest. Also, since I've been doing this since I was 15 years old. So since I was 15 years old, I've been working on television. So I know where the hard cam is, whether I'm in Japan, whether I'm in Mexico, whether I'm in Puerto Rico. But thanks to Puerto Rico and thanks to Carlos Colon, Savio Vega, Ray Gonzalez, Carlito Caribbean Cool, Eddie Colon, and all those people that taught me how to work, I was able to come to America and go to Mexico and adapt to those styles. And not completely just adapt, but be able to just absorb and learn from that and come up with your own style as well, you know, because that's how... Because I went to Japan and I moved to Japan and I lived at a dojo, learned the style there, moved to Mexico, learned the style in Mexico, respected the culture. Now I live in Mexico. So to me, it was very important to let everybody know that I did come from Puerto Rico. And if it wasn't for those roots and that, you know, what was the kind of program into my mind with Carlos Colon and Savio, was always to put the crowd first, no matter where you're at, and learn how to wrestle at those places that you're going. And part of that is studying and learning how those crowds work, because we worked in Puerto Rico, did not work in America, did not work in Mexico, and did not work in Japan. It's different styles, right? It's different kinds of music, right? For different kinds of crowds. So thanks to Savio and Carlos teaching me and kind of like, you know, Terminator, reprogram the ship and then send you out there to the world to be like, okay, dude, if you got it, you got it. If you don't, you don't. But if you got it, you'll be able to prove that you got it anywhere. Mm. Puerto Rico's a big part of that, you know.
Well, usually we ask the version of this question where it's like, do you think the style you learn will translate here in the States or whatever company you're with, X, Y, and Z? But let me flip it. And now that you're learning the NWA style, NWA TV, NWA promos, do you think that style would translate to, you know, Puerto Rico, Mexico? Oh,
in Puerto Rico, they will eat that up. Because, you know, dude, like Puerto Rico is based on a good, like good wrestling over there is based on a great promo, another great promo from your opponent. And then by the time you guys go to the ring, it's like The Rock and Hogan, dude. By the time they were out there, all I remember, you know, all most people remember is just that stare down that they had in the middle of the ring. And they're looking side to side. And that's how Puerto Rican wrestling is, dude. You give them a good story. You give them a good promo, just like the NWA. That's why I'm like so excited about the territory system coming back into the NWA. Because there is a possibility of having NWA Puerto Rico, and I know people will eat that up. So, you know, the possibilities are endless. And I completely think, I don't think it will work as well as in Mexico, because Mexico is, they're desperate. You can't put a hold in Mexico. You know, if you put a hold, it's for someone to tap right away. So, like, you know, I don't think it'll translate the same in Mexico. But in Puerto Rico, 100%.
Well, Puerto Rico's obviously, when I was growing up, it was known for the blood and guts. And then, you know, it was very physical. And it was one of those places where I think that, like, the men's men went to wrestle. Yeah, see,
there's just okay. Your zit's okay. Come on. For what?
Thanks to Carlos Colon, because he's like, champ, tonight I need good blood. And I'm like, okay, dude, like, here we go.
I like they leaned in for that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But they love that. They love blood and guts. That's what they love. Like, you could have Lars a whole match where he's just punch and kick, and they'll be like, this is the match of the year. But everything that went into it, like the promo, the storylines going into it. Like, I remember one time they did this thing where, like, Savio Vega stabbed Invader with a fork in the chest. And that was, like, one of the big storylines. Like, he beat him up, and then they took him in an ambulance, and he brought him down from the ambulance and stabbed him in the chest with a fork, you know, and everybody's like, holy crap, dude. You know what I mean? Like, this is crazy. And then they had the next match, sold out. you know, like they love that stuff, blood and guts. And I feel like, in a way, that simple style of wrestling could work in a lot of places, you know, but we have overcomplicated wrestling now. So
I would tend to agree with you there. But, you know, I think about like the invader and the blood puking and the whole thing. And, you know, just those images, you know, sort of burn into my memory. So, you know, you're in Puerto Rico, you come to America, you've been going back and forth from Mexico. I think you even had some time in Impact, if memory serves me correct.
Yep.
And Japan. So you've been basically all over the world now. And, you know, over the last 10, 15 years of your career, you've adapted in so many different ways. And I know you would probably say, yeah, that this has all made me a better wrestler. My question, though, is there a specific style that you like to do that if you could only do this one thing, right, this is what I would do for the rest of my life?
Man, I think it would be a style between Japanese wrestling and Lucha Libre, like that little happy medium in between. I love wrestling in Mexico, love the culture. Obviously, that's why I live here and I'm part of AAA. You know, it's something that like really fills me with joy, just doing these shows. But I really miss Japan and the culture and the fact that it's more like a sport and they respect you so much. And I feel like if I had to pick and if I could end my career in Japan and find a happy medium between those two styles, that would be it, you know. But yeah, man, if I had to pick, that would be it. That little happy medium, you know, that hybrid style.
Is there any
Daniel Bryan? Like, I feel Daniel Bryan is the perfect wrestler.
Understood.
Like, absolutely.
He can wrestle anybody, big guys, little guys, fast guys, slow guys, and he can't have a bad match. It's just like he broke his arm and he still had a great match. It's just like, what the hell, dude? You know.
But, you know, I definitely want to touch on the recent news that NWA assigned a television deal. They're being a little quiet on where it's going. We don't know yet. I'm sure you don't know yet. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
I know a little bit.
All right. Well, we won't press. We don't want you to spoil anything and get in trouble with the boss. But
what I can say is that it's going to be really cool and it's going to give a lot of people that had shots in the past not go so well, like myself. And when I mean a shot in the past, is a shot of the big time, a shot of WWE, or guys that were right there and got released, and guys that were close to be a star, but you know, something happened, a little slip, and you piss someone off and piss the wrong guy off, and now you can't be there anymore. And I think a lot of those people, including myself, are going to have an opportunity to show what we got and show that we're not just some B movie wrestlers, you know. And yeah, that's all I can say. It's going to be really cool for a lot of people.
Well, who did you piss off at the WWE? Because there you were, Cruiserweight Classic as an alternate, if memory serves. That was one of my favorite things that the WWE ever did. And then we saw you a few times, I think, in NXT rings. Mm-hmm. So, like, what happened there? Was it just one day it was good and the next day it wasn't?
Well, it was like one of those things where everything was going perfect. And then next thing you know, I was completely healthy. And I hurt my knee at like a show in California. I went to the doctor. They clear me. They told me I was good to go. I go to WWE doctors. They clear me. They tell me I was good to go. And I do the match and I fucking blow my knee, dude. And it sucked because at the time, you know, since then, me and Mustafa Ali have like squashed all of this stuff for anybody that doesn't know. And he felt like I took something from him. Like I took that night from him because it was in Chicago at the Allstate Arena. We're both Chicago boys, you know. It's like we're the two alternates of the Cruiserweight Classic that a lot of people were looking forward to being at the Cruiserweight Classic. And he got to be part of it. And that match was for me to put him over and put him on the map. And he felt like I took that from him by getting hurt, you know. And, you know, immediately when we got to the back, like, he got on Adam Pearce's ear, you know, and God knows what he told him, you know. And that was apparently the night that I was supposed to get my full-time job, because I had been working for WWE and NXT at that point on and off for 3 years, because I lived in Florida at the time.
Right.
So I think that had a lot to do with it. And, you know, it really sucked, because it broke my heart, you know, because I felt bad, because I'm like, man, I just screwed my boy. I did my best to just stretch the match and make him look so good, you know, even though I was walking with a freaking pirate leg, like a stick leg, you know, I couldn't bend it or anything. I'm like trying to do the spots, trying to do the moves. And they're like, you guys need to get out of the ring. And I'm just trying to keep doing this so he could get hit his finish and we could go home. And yeah, man, it sucked, because I felt like I let my friends down, I let him down, and I let, you know, everybody that was rooting for us down, you know. And I think that was like one of the things that happened. And I'm looking forward to redeeming myself, you know, and I've been working my ass off to just be the best version of myself and keep working hard. I didn't let that stop me. That was 6 years ago now. And I'm just looking forward, man. Looking forward to the future.
You know, kind of going back to television, NWA, you know, when you go to a TV tapings, of course, you give it all and you do what you want and do what you can. But, you know, there's something different than YouTube and now a television contract. How does that change your mindset going into this set of tapings, a pay-per-view, knowing that you're building into a television program to maybe build yourself up or throw something new out? Or, you know, what is the difference in mindset now?
It definitely puts everything into a different perspective, where you appreciate things way more because you know what it's like to have nothing, right? So when you come from nothing, when you get even a little bit of good news, it's a good day, you know? So I've always been, and you could ask anybody in the NWA locker room, Becky and myself, we give nobody problems. You know, we're like the easiest guys to work with. We put matches together just like that, you know, and we've actually been like filming for like 6 months for the stuff that's coming out. So like when they're like, okay, we're going to be filming you guys, it's like, okay, nothing changed. Just the makeup weirdos are in this corner over here, you know, and you got the ex-WWE guys over here, and then you got the cool guys over here, and then you got, you know what I mean? Like everybody's scattered up in the locker room. We're always in the corner where all the weirdos put their makeup on. It's like so funny. So nothing really changed, you know what I mean? It's just like, okay, there's just a bunch of people with cameras around them, you know, filming everything that we're doing, like weirdos. So like nothing, just don't act weird, just be yourself. And I remember like EC3, like he's so funny, he's such a weirdo. Like he's like, he like hits me in the shoulder and keeps walking. He's like, it's for the show, brother. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, like fucking weirdo, like he just kept walking, you know what I mean? I'm like, nothing changes. They just this you know, like the reality of all of this is like, we need to be ourselves, you know. Just be yourself. So yeah, nothing has really changed for me other than the fact that it makes me appreciate what we're doing even more.
Well, you know, you've wrestled on our
background noise. We're like recording.
It's all good, bro. It's all good. You've had a lot of incarnations with names, and you know, you finally have come to this Mecha Wolf, which I think is the best name and the hardest name and one of the best wrestling names. It could be a name of a band. It's just whatever, you know. I think it's
you super thank, cool. Sammy Callahan for that.
Really?
That was all
okay. So he's a good friend of our show. So, you know, coming into that persona, was it something that you were kind of working towards? Because obviously your characters are always sort of evolving over time. So Sammy Callahan's the one that gives you the name, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So how does that all come about?
So at the time, I remember I was watching a shit ton of Game of Thrones. So I was watching hella Game of Thrones, and like I'm like, man, these coats that these guys are wearing look so cool. And they had these like wolves on them and fur. I'm like, I'm gonna get something like that. So I ordered like outfits that were like similar to these cloaks. And then I wanted to come out with a mask. And I remember I tried like a Doctor Doom mask, like all these weird masks, and I spray painted them. And finally, I remember Sammy kept saying that, like, dude, you look like a werewolf, and you look like a machine. You're like a mechanical werewolf. You're like a mecha wolf. You should be mecha wolf John Dyer, because my first name is John. He's like, you should be John Dyer. I'm like, I like mecha wolf, but I think it kind of sounds cheesy. You know, like, and then everybody's like, it kind of sounds cheesy, you know, at first. So one day, this is the craziest story, and it's like true. We're all like in a room, you know, as you do. A bunch of the boys are in one of the hotel rooms gathering, talking. Sammy's on his laptop. I remember Rich Swan was there with us, the Chris brothers, a couple other people were there. And Sammy's like, hey, man, can I borrow your phone? And I just, like, don't even think about it. And I just give him my phone, right? Next thing you know, like 30 minutes go by, and Sammy has like this like evil grin and just turns his laptop around. And my Twitter said the Mecha Wolf. He made this banner with all these pictures that he found of me, and just it looked badass. It had like a wolf and a moon, and like he's like, dude, you gotta do it. You gotta do it tonight. You gotta do it tonight. Tonight's the pay-per-view. You gotta do it. So I'm like, oh, what the hell is this? So I call my buddy from Chicago. I'm like, hey, can you add like this wolf howl to this intro of this song? And he's like, of course, man. And then they played it, and I came out to that show, and I did the howl. People, like, they got into it, and they start howling, and I'm like, oh, man, that was like such a sign of relief, because it's like, you got to think about the fact that I worked on the same thing like all my life. That's what I built my whole name, you know, my whole life. And to change to that and to be able to not only adapt to that character and that gimmick, I didn't have to adapt because it was like myself, you know, like,
well, that's the
myself. So it felt,
but
cool.
that's the thing, because you couldn't get like, you couldn't give Sammy Guevara the Mecha Wolf. It just wouldn't, you'd be like, oh, cheese bag. You, it's like you live the gimmick. That's all.
Thank you so much. And that means so much because it again, going back to the WWE thing, when I got hurt, I thought like my career was over. And then like, I remember people that were my friends, they used like my old gimmick, and now they're on TV with my old gimmick, with my clothes, with my poses. And now I'm like, damn, I gotta start from scratch. And I gotta come back with something hot. So that's like, you know, watching movies and all this stuff, and that's what I came up with. And now I'm happy that I did it, because it's like myself, you know. So,
you know, we're getting to the end of the podcast. I know we're down to our final questions each. And after listening to that story, and we like to talk a lot about the creative aspect of putting a character together, and hearing that a lot of it is you. When you're going forward now, I'm going to guess, you know, the Sammy thing happened, what, 2017, 2018, when you mentioned the guys and the players involved, mm-hmm. and the Chris brothers together, that's about that period.
That was circus time, yeah, around
yeah. there. So now you're, you know, several years in, past coronavirus and all this stuff. How do you approach the creative aspect now to this character that is so tied to who you are?
Well, right now, we are with Vampiro's, our manager in the NWA. And Vampiro's like one of my big inspirations from wrestling. Don't tell him that, because he gets cocky.
Oh, we won't. Trust us.
And you know that he was very inspired by the band The Misfits. The Misfits is like one of my favorite bands of all time. So I take a lot of my influence in my character now, as far as the makeup and like the phrases and stuff like that, and like the catchphrases and little spooky things that we say. I base it a lot on bands that I love and like, because people in wrestling just copy people in wrestling. I like to take stuff from bands or shows or comic books that I'm really into. And I was like, what the hell? We're with Vampiro, dude. Might as well just kind of like to tweak a couple of things from the Misfits look and make it our own, and kind of have a new version of us, of Black Rebellion, not too far away from who we are, but a little bit more edgy into this like little punk rock Misfits style. And it fits because, you know, my band Monster Wolf, we've opened for Doyle of the Misfits a bunch of times. We played with them at the Whiskey Go-Go. We played with them here in Mexico. And it's just really cool. And for all those NWA fans that are going to be tuning into NWA Style when October 28th, we have a very special very special surprise that has to do with horror business. I'm not going to say anything else.
Okay, cool. Well, for my last, I can't wait. For my last question, I guess, you know, being in this tag team and working with a guy like Kerry Morton, you know, it is, what is that all like for you guys? You know, because here's a kind of a, you know, fourth generation wrestler. Yeah, I think he's one of the most talented in the company, one of the most talented young guys in the world. You're a little, obviously, a little older. Mm-hmm. What's it like working with him?
Man, I think it's just amazing because watching him grow from when he first came to the NWA to what he's doing now, it's like he's grown like 5 years in two. It's just crazy to see that because when I came along, when I was his age, I sucked. I thought I was good, but I sucked. And I sucked because I didn't have the right people around me, and he does. Right. You know what I mean? Like, he takes advice from everybody. Carries, that's one thing about him. He's really a really humble kid, and that's what's going to take him really far because not only is he humble, he knows he's good, but he doesn't use that against everybody else or to his advantage. And that's what I respect the most about Kerry because he's somebody that knows who he is, that should be, like, walking with his chest like high up in the air, you know, with his nose high up in the air. But he's like one of the really good brothers in the locker room.
Cool.
And I wish we had like 10 of them because he's so freaking awesome. And he's a great party guy to take out and party. So awesome. Awesome. he's a good side character too.
That's cool.
Nice. I know we mentioned it a few times, October 28th, Cleveland, Ohio, pay-per-view. Make sure you go out and get it. The NWA is doing phenomenal stuff. November 4th, Skyway Studio, Nashville, television tapings. November 18th, make sure you get your tickets to all that stuff. Mech, where can people find you, your music, all that other stuff that you've got so many fingers in pots and pans, just making tons of money for us all?
Jack of all trades.
Yeah.
Of none, but at least I'm trying. You can find me on Instagram, is the easiest way. Mechawolf, switch the A for a V, and you make it super true, like black metal, bro. And then Monster Wolf Band on Instagram.
There you go. Hey, listen, you're in the studio. You're rocking it out right now. Thank you for taking a few minutes away, talking some wrestling, your career with us. We totally appreciate it, man.
Thank you guys for having me. I mean, honestly, like, it's a big honor. Keep rocking, guys. I'll see you guys soon.
Because of me, right? Once again,
of course,
me.
Of course. Yeah. But you're the coolest guy here.
I'm your fourth favorite wrestling podcaster.
You might be number two right now.
I'll take it. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Mech, man, have a great night.
You guys, take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.